listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to this Easter slash Passover edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. How do you like my coverall there, kid?
I love it.
I get them all? Okay,
you're
cool.
You're a man for all people.
Thank you. You know, I was, again, raised Catholic and now a Christian man, but the more and more I dig into this media slash analyst, side of my career, I'm meeting more, Jewish friends. You know, like my man Andy Baskin, who you can catch Nathan and I, on the Channel 5 Dog Pound Report at 11:30 on Sunday. You know, it was Baskin, Zagura, yourself. So I think my Jewish friends are outweighing my non-Jewish friends at this point.
Uh-oh.
That's a good thing, right?
I guess so,
okay,
yeah.
Great thing. All right, as we said, I'm joined by the kid here in the Dog Bowl. Dave DiNatale joins me from the Galleria Studios. The interesting story that I want to bring up, and this is just an intuitive look into the scouting process, and this is probably one of the most invasive looks at a prospect. Back in a few years ago, Justin Blackmon, who has been troubled his entire career since his career at Oklahoma State and now in the National Football League, drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars in the top five of the NFL draft. Mark Dominic goes into detail, the general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the time.
Who actually traded the pick to Jacksonville.
Correct, who traded the pick to Jacksonville. And this is him talking about a scout. And it says that Mark Dominic, quote-unquote, says, "We found out there was a bar called the Cricket Inn or the Cricket, which is a popular bar there at Oklahoma State. And a scout on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers staff was told every day from 3 o'clock till 11 o'clock at night to sit at the bar incognito." And that was his job. It wasn't sitting in a meeting or going to the combine. This was his job for a week. And it says, and he checked in on how many times Justin Blackmon would come into the bar. And to quote Mark Dominic, he came in too many times and immediately took Justin Blackmon off the board. What do you think about that?
I think it's a better question to throw at you, because from me as a fan's perspective, I say invade, get me all the information I can.
Yeah.
But as a former prospect, I know you must have felt like a piece of meat at the combine to begin with. The whole process, though, I mean, how do you feel as one of those people? Do you think you were going for a $1 million job, so it's anything's open, that's the way I feel, or do you feel like, hey, wait a minute, my privacy shouldn't be invaded?
I absolutely think that and for me personally, I had nothing to hide. So invade, you're going to find nothing. So I can understand wholeheartedly why an organization who was going to, at that time in the old CBA, was going to pay this guy a ton of money. As the third overall pick, he probably had $20+ million guaranteed. And now, Cam Newton, the first overall pick in the new CBA, got a $20 million four-year contract. So it's night and day. So at the time, and I think it's absolute genius. Invade and find out as much as you can. I also heard different scouts go back all the way to grade school to understand the ins and outs of how this kid was. What kind of student was he? What kind of kid was he? To experiment in the community and understand what kind of upbringing he has. So, Dino, I'll ask you this question again as I ask the kid: is it too invasive, or do you think for your team and your organization, you want to expense as much as you have to find out everything you can to go all in on a kid that early in the draft?
Yeah, you're making a significant investment. It's a business decision. You're probably there's a manner of thinking. You're also letting this person into your quote unquote your football family. You've got to be sure. You've got to turn over every rock, do your due diligence. So I think that was a fine tactic by the Buccaneers. It obviously turned out to be the right one. Justin's had some problems since becoming a professional. So I have no problem with doing that kind of a background check, going back to extended layers besides just your college career, watching tape and talking to a college coach, but taking that a step further, because your goal is, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, your goal is you're drafting somebody in the first round, let's say. You're hoping he's going to be there 10 years.
Right.
That's a long time. So you need to know historically what kind of person has this been. Quick example, guys. I'm a Bowling Green guy. I'm dealing with the fact that my head basketball coach just got fired yesterday, first-year coach.
That was crazy.
For behavior that was inappropriate. Now, had he had a history of that? That's what people have been asking me. On the surface, no. But if you do, if you're able to go back and do research and find out if there have been any kind of incidents in the in somebody's past, I think it gives you a much better frame of reference as you make your decision whether to take somebody or not.
And Dino, just to clue me in and all the callers, what was the inappropriate behavior?
I wish I could. I can only say so much because it's only appropriate on the radio.
Gotcha.
It was major disrespect towards women.
And he got drunk and acted like a fool.
Yeah.
I think is the easiest way to say it.
Yes.
Not cool. Not cool. And again, I think from my standpoint, they could have asked me any question. I was an open book. And I know that as Tony Romo has just come out and said in regards to Greg Hardy as the new addition to the Cowboys roster, that everyone deserves a second chance. And that is the one opportunity that an organization has to really shine a light on you and to dig up as many skeletons as they have, especially when you're a first round pick, because I'm sure the emphasis that they put on a fourth round pick, they still want to know you're a good guy, that you love the game of football, for
sure,
them to take you, but not like spending the money that they do in the first round, especially if you only have one pick.
Now, did the agents, like when you were coming out of school, did your agents sit you down and say, Matt, you're going to be under a microscope, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this? Or is that, am I complicating it more?
You know, it's yes, they did. But again, for me personally, who had no track record of bad behavior, they just graced the surface with that kind of stuff. Like, just know, keep doing what you're doing. Don't, you know, yeah, and say, don't do this, don't do that. But for a guy who might have had a hiccup in college, maybe a positive test for PEDs or marijuana, or you know, maybe a guy who took money in college, who has had maybe even one strike against them in college, an agent will go above and beyond and bring in like a consultant to work with you consistently, to say the right things, to do the right things, to get you the help, because they want to keep you a squeaky clean prior to that first round pick.
Were there any troublemakers, and you don't have to give me names, but were there any guys in your class at Ohio State that were guys that needed to be sat down and told that?
Not really. You know, my recruiting class is very unique. I know we were 18, but I'll say it. We like to drink and we like to have fun, you know, but we did it together. In mm-hmm. some cases, it turned into a fight, and the Columbus cops, thank the Lord, would, you know, turn a blind eye to that, which was great, and keep us squeaky clean. But, you know, for some guys, and for whatever reason, it was guys that were not from the state of Ohio that didn't understand the Midwest living, what it meant to be a Buckeye like a lot of us did, that were from the South, the guys from Florida, Alabama, that would come in and just have no regard for, you know, the economy, no regard for, like I said, to what it meant to be a Buckeye, and just wouldn't go to class, would disrespect other people. But that was the way they were raised, you know, and that's something they had to adjust to very quickly, or else even still, when it came to football, they'd be phased out because they didn't accept coaching the way we accepted coaching. We were a sponge wanting to learn, wanting to play, and because they were so gifted and because they were a top prospect, they expected to just walk on the field and roll their helmet out and be treated a certain way, and everybody just kind of bow down to them. But we were, you know, like Jim O'Neill, we were bloodying their nose and showing them how we play football.
I think that's something that guys like me and Dino, just pure fans, sort of maybe missed the point on a little bit, is that everybody, like take the college example, you guys all come in as highly recruited guys. The guys that are willing to work and take coaching, you know, it might not be the coach's fault. If a guy comes in and he's not coachable, then it doesn't matter how good of a coach you have.
Well, I mean, for a Cleveland Browns example, look at a guy like Justin Gilbert,
right?
You know, who was not putting forth the effort from Monday through Saturday enough so to even be considered to play on a Sunday, you know? And that's where, when I talk about, you know, the epiphanies that happened in my career, it was not understanding a certain defense and then, you know, studying really hard and going above and beyond, and all of a sudden it was a switch. And it was also, too, from a National Football League perspective, and that's why I think, you know, the additions of Dansby and Whitner and Mack and Thomas and Randy Starks and Tremont Williams, who, you know, Jim O'Neill raved about of what he's going to be in that DB room, mm-hmm. are going to be full-on assets towards helping these kids grow up. And for me, it was learning to be a pro, you know, keeping how to manage my money. You know, what is a stupid buy and what's a smart buy? What's frivolous and what's not? How to treat a woman, you know, and how to accept a compliment? All those things I learned from other pros who'd been in the league five times as long as I have.
Go ahead, kid.
Was it a harder transition for you from high school to college, or college to the pros?
College to pros.
on the field and off the field?
Yes. It, and like I said, it, and more so than anything, it was I was the All-American national champion who, you know what, didn't stink, walking onto the San Diego Chargers practice field drafted fourth round, and then I got hit in the mouth, and then I realized I didn't understand the defense, and so I was just wandering. And when you wander on a football field in the National Football League, you get hurt. And so that's the transition that was very rough from a football standpoint. But from a professional, I mean, from an off-the-field standpoint, the transition from college to pro was so different. And this is the best way I can say it, is I went from being a dependent with my mom and dad counting me on their taxes to an independent making $500,000 in a year, you know, writing a check, like filing taxes, paying rent. Like I knew nothing of that, you know, or a mortgage. I knew nothing of that. Buying a car, you know, writing a check, like balancing a checkbook. Those are all the things that you have to face, you know, and obviously, you know, it's very easy when, for me, it was very easy being in California with the, you know, the sunshine every day and the palm trees. And that's the one trouble, the trouble spot that a lot of guys fall into in the National Football League is, you know, 20% of the roster make above minimum salary. And of course, everybody's paid significantly. I get it, right? But when young players see veterans who've been in the league and have paid their dues, driving nice cars and buying nice things and doing all these, you know, like over the top things, you as a young player, you want to do it too. And it catches up to a lot of guys, you know.
What was your dumbest purchase?
My dumbest purchase was probably thousands and thousands of dollars worth of alcohol in Vegas.
Thousands?
10 plus. Yeah.
Wilhelm.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
It was fun.
I was going to say it
was fun. It was fun.
It was epic.
It was epic. Well, you know what? Let's grab a timeout to stay on the clock. The Kid, Dave DiNatale, the Galleria Studios, we're having a great conversation. We want to hear from you. 216-578-0850. You can review from anything we had on this week. You know, we've had Dwayne Bowe this week. Do you like him? Is he a great addition? We've had Jim O'Neill yesterday talking about they will stop the run. Female referee, what do you think? Also, too, it's tournament time. Final four. Who do you got? Wisconsin, Kentucky, Duke, Michigan State. Again, Matt Wilhelm, Dave DiNatale, the Kid here in the Dog Bowl on 850 WKNR.